This is Will's Band of the Week for February 10th, 2010. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week, and we're back to full strength after Barrett and Chris served penalties the last 2 weeks. In fact, Barrett had an egregious penalty that kept him out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was kicked off. I can't remember what I said on that last podcast, but maybe I recommended a song that Will didn't like.
We decided to keep it in-house, our disputes in-house, and not to disclose the
take it to the media.
Yeah. So,
I wasn't completely out of pocket. We went to a concert.
We did.
On our normal podcasting night, so it's not like I was slacking off.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we took in A.A. Bondi, and yeah. What did you think? I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
You're not giving it a wholehearted recommendation, huh?
Kind of a mellow Monday night crowd, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. He seemed very, very serious and very intense.
Yeah, I would say that's probably accurate. I sort of like the way he, you know, for some reason, you've heard me say before, I'm not really a big fan of like 7 or 8 minute songs. But I thought on some of his songs that he just stretched them out, they were actually pretty good. He did some sort of atmospheric electric guitar stuff and some, you know, really quiet for 2 minutes and then got kind of loud. And, you know, there were some good dynamics to it, I thought.
So are you going to segue into, like, playing any of the stuff that you recorded at the show?
I do have a little bit of footage. Should we play some of it?
Play a little bit of it. Just give people a sampling. Although I did notice in listening to a couple of your clips that there were people talking nearby. So it's not like a soundboard recording or anything.
Not quite. Okay, let me find something here. Okay, we'll just fade something in here. A little sampling of A.A. Bondi as witnessed by Chris and myself last week. Bass was starting to overload my pocket sound system there a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good sound for just kind of having a little makeshift system he had going on.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I had a hard time finding a clip that really demonstrated what the show was like, though, because a couple of the tracks that I recorded were like 8 minutes, and they're just such a slow build, and then there was one where the song sort of ended, and then there was like 3 minutes of atmospheric guitar. So I guess you had to be there. But that's A.A. Bondi. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was.
What was the crowd like? Was it near sold out? Or
I think it was maybe half full, maybe, really? You think, Chris? You know, actually, it seemed like a pretty decent crowd, though, for a Monday night. It didn't have a feel of being really sparse. I mean, it seemed like, right, a pretty decent crowd. It wasn't one of those where you go and you say, oh, God, this is embarrassing. Not enough people showed up. That was my impression anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like it was just a lot of people there to listen to the music. It wasn't, you know, a weekend show where half the people are there just to get as drunk as possible and, you know, bump into other people and stuff. It was, it was about half full, and everybody was very sedate and very respectful and, you know,
yeah,
just kind of enjoying the show.
Yeah, there were no fights or anything.
Well,
it was very civil.
Aside from when I clocked you.
Yeah, other than that. When we were debating what our favorite song on the album was and you slugged me. Yeah. Okay, so, by the way, this is Will's Band of the Week, and you can contact us by sending an email to willsband@yahoo.com or going to the website willsband.net and leaving a comment there. And you can subscribe from iTunes, and you should do that. And I guess you could send Chris an email, too, if you wanted to. But, yeah, that's it. That's our contact information that I didn't want to forget. And let's do a Grammys update. Chris, did you watch it?
I was kind of in and out a little bit on the Grammys.
I mean,
I saw Pink spinning on a rope wearing a thong with water poured all over herself. So
and some kind of,
pretty much,
like,
what I got out of it.
There was some kind of skin-colored outfit she was wearing, right?
What? I assumed it was just a...
It wasn't like actual skin. I mean, some of it was, but there was like an outfit that was kind of skin-colored. But then, yeah, she was like swinging around through the air. Did you see this, Barry?
I didn't see any of it.
Yeah, it was maybe not worth seeing that much, but...
All I found out from the Grammys is that Kings of Leon took a big prize. And when did people start liking them? I mean, I liked them a while ago, but are they popular now?
I don't know.
Do they play them on the radio and stuff?
They weren't up for like best new artist, were they?
Well, no. Maybe they were. Now I can't remember.
Well, yeah, but
I remember having an album from them like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, right. That's the funny thing about the Grammys. I mean, new artists can just mean best artists that we happen to notice.
Yeah,
right.
And I will say that my one prediction, I only made one prediction and I got it correct. And that was that Phoenix would win the alternative album. Did you make a note of that, Chris?
I wasn't aware that Phoenix won until you just told me just now. So,
what were they up against?
Well, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs were in there, and then there were a couple like nutty things. But my comment was Phoenix will win because they can't be stopped. It just seemed like, you know, they have the momentum. And so, I found this interesting. A lot of the awards where I was watching some of this with my son, and we would just predict, you know, not hardly knowing anything. And you just see the five nominees, and my success rate was like 50%, you know, like way better than chance. Just because there's somehow you can just get a gut reaction, and they're predictable in that way. I don't know why that is.
I think it might be a special talent that you've got, Will.
Well, it's
rather
probably,
than it
yeah.
being some visual cues that everyone's picking up on. I think maybe you have a gift.
Do they have Vegas bets on this? Maybe I should be doing that. I could make a killing on this.
They may.
I don't see how you can bet on something that somebody already knows, though. I mean, somebody knows because they have to print out a card and everything.
Yeah, okay, I guess you're right. There'd be a leak then. Maybe you'd have to bet on it like a week in advance or something. Well, anyway, here's what happened with Phoenix. So we were wondering, you know, are they going to show this? And then I guess I was looking to see who was nominated, and this was like early in the show. I went on their site, and it already had announced that Phoenix won. So this is an award that they gave away before the show even starts. So there's a whole bunch of awards. And so then I found the video online of Phoenix accepting their award, and almost the whole theater is empty. And it's like must be like 10 in the morning or something. and so they go up there, and there's like this clapping on a golf course. You know, they go up there and thank everybody for their award in a near empty auditorium. Really bizarre.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I caught a little of the red carpet, and they are, you know, Taylor Swift or something. They asked her, like, so what's it like? Because you've already won two Grammys today. So that must have been the same type of thing, like a couple of the minor awards they give out, not on the telecast, and she had already won.
Right, right. They said that about a couple other people too, I think, you know, they've already won two and you're like, wait a minute. No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Yep. So, okay, there you go. I guess we've said enough about the Grammys. There was nothing in the Grammy Awards that would have changed either of our opinions, I don't think. Was there, Chris?
No. I mean, I did see the, I saw the Green Day portion, and apparently they've taken their American Idiot album and made it into some kind of Broadway show or something. So they had the Broadway people singing it, and it just you know, it didn't do it for me. So
it was kind of hokey.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, that's kind of how Broadway shows would be. So, I mean, what else would you expect? So, yeah, I don't know. It was an odd match, I thought, too.
Actually, and it's actually going to sound like I watched a lot more of it than I did. I watched the there was a big rap performance at the end with Eminem and Lil Wayne and Drake. And
okay.
It was funny because literally half of it was bleeped out. So,
oh, really?
I mean, you couldn't listen to it because it was just so cut up and spotty just because, you know, they had to bleep it with the sensor. So I don't even know what the purpose of that is.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I didn't watch it, but did either Neon Indian or Surfer Blood take home any Grammys?
I don't think they did. If they did, they were on at like 8 in the morning and nobody was there. So, yeah.
Well, they are honored to be chosen as the bands of the week.
They are.
So that's something.
They are. And
yeah, we're getting a little backed up, so we're double teaming it this week.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about this of like, are we going to start doing more than one band when we get backed up? Because I'm sensing getting backed up in the near future once again. So we'll have to see.
My question is: do the people that listen to this podcast are we going to make them pay twice for this now?
Yeah.
Like when do we need to get their credit card information again?
I don't know. Yeah, we might need to. It's like premium content, especially if we
wouldn't
have two.
Hurt
yeah.
For people to email their account numbers and passwords and things, just you know, in case we need to charge them again.
Right.
It's all secure.
Yeah.
You can trust us.
Yes, I keep all the numbers in a little box under my bed.
Okay, before we get to our bands, though, what did you guys think of The Who at the Super Bowl?
Well, they're not young guys.
Yeah.
They're old, and I don't know, they just kind of did a little medley of some of their biggest songs, and I don't know, I guess I wasn't expecting much. The light show and all that was pretty impressive, but...
Yeah.
I
sort of liked it because it seemed less fake than most Super Bowl shows. I mean, it seemed like their vocals were a little off, which to me was kind of good because it meant they didn't, you know, pipe in a recording.
Right.
Like most Super Bowl shows are just so completely fake and lip synced and everything. And some people were saying they thought that they actually piped in Roger Daltrey screaming because he couldn't scream. I'm not sure if that's true.
Huh.
that's kind of lame if they did that, but. You know, I thought Pete Townsend was kind of cool. You know, I guess I like seeing old guys still out there doing it.
Right.
And I wasn't expecting them to sound like, you know, 25-year-old Roger Daltrey or something.
Right.
So,
yeah, how long can they keep bringing out these great big acts from the 60s and 70s?
Yeah, I don't know. There aren't.
You know, they're really running out here.
They're going to go country next, I bet.
You think so? Like Willie and Waylon for. Yeah.
Well, they could go
2011.
They could go to, you know, Taylor Swift or Carrie Underwood, right?
Yeah, well, Carrie Underwood sang the national anthem. I bet they go to like Beyonce or Jay-Z or somebody before.
Maybe.
Although that seems that's like way too big of a swing from what they're doing now.
They need something
with
really
safe,
broader appeal than that, though, don't you think? Like, I would think that Madonna would be in line. You need somebody that is mega, mega big. And until they're all used up, they're going to keep picking people like that.
Has Hank Williams ever?
She's made her whole career.
Oh, no. Hank Williams is going to do it.
He'll be Hank Williams Jr., right? Yeah, he'll do
like
a big sing-along with a Monday Night Football song or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Unfortunately, that's going to happen.
Okay, and one other thing. I watched another music documentary in the past week. It's about The Clash called West Way to the World. Have either of you guys seen this?
I have not seen that.
It was made a long time ago. It's like from 2002 or something. And it's basically a bunch of interviews with The Clash about what it was like being in the Clash. And I would definitely recommend it. There's a lot of Joe Strummer. It's probably about 50% Joe Strummer, 25% Mick Jones, 20% Paul Simonon, and 5% Topper Hedden.
That's about the right mix, though, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. And Joe Strummer, but he was really an articulate guy and really kind of interesting to listen to what he says about the band and why they were successful. And he gives a ton of credit to Topper Hedden. He says they were basically, they weren't really even a band, a worthy band, until they got a good drummer. And he said they tried out like 100 drummers or some ridiculous number. And then once they got him, they were like, okay, now we've got this thing put together. And then he ends up getting kicked out of the band because he's a heroin addict. And what Strummer says is that he says, you know, a person could be on heroin and like play a saxophone because they're just kind of gliding along. But he says there's no way they can drum. It just doesn't work. You know, and he's like, and then the some of the interviews, well, the only interviews they have from Topper Hedden, the guy looks like he's almost dead. He looks just absolutely like hell. And so after I watched it, I was saying, God, I would just wonder if he's still alive. And I looked it up and he's still alive. Joe Strummer's not, because he got some kind of weird, I forgot what he got. He got some medical bad deal and died at age 50, I think, wasn't it? Like 2 or 3 years ago?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
A little longer ago, I think.
Maybe. Time flies. I don't keep track. Anyway, it's a good documentary to watch. All right, let's get to our music, okay? We've got a band that I think all of us kind of like. They're called Surfer Blood, and they're from West Palm Beach, Florida, and they've got an album that just came out called Astro Coast. And Chris.
Yes.
Tell us what you think of the album and tell us what we should start out by playing.
I was actually going to suggest a game that we play on every podcast. It's called Guess What Band My Wife Thinks This Sounds Like.
Oh,
because, that's good.
Because she...
I found some like doozies in this one.
Evil eye right now.
Well, my wife hasn't heard this one, so I haven't gotten to that.
I would say start with my favorite song on here is actually an instrumental. The only instrumental on here, it's called Neighbor Riffs. So that's what I would start with. I think that's a good intro to their sound.
Yeah, that's a really good one. And it comes right in the middle of the album. And it's kind of this rockin' instrumental. It's only a little over 2 minutes long. And yeah, it's really cool. This is it, Surfer Blood. And the song is called Neighbor Riffs. Yeah, that's really rocking.
For some reason, that just reminds me of a song like you'd hear at a high school dance or something, like in the 80s or something.
Only it's too cool, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Anything with a driving bass line like that, how could you not like it?
So what does Chris's wife's name is Morgan. What does Morgan think that sounds like? Does she have one for this song, or is it?
I believe it was that song that actually got her to guess.
The wedding present?
No. this is only entertaining because, you know, her musical selections are usually fairly limited. So, she thinks that this band sounds like Journey.
Oh, God, I feel so much less cool now liking that song.
That's why it's a fun game. Because generally it's going to be...
I'll tell you what, though. There's a couple of songs later on that sound like things in that exact vein.
Yeah, and that
you can then laugh at me.
What do you guys think of this? I thought it sounded like Grizzly Bear with the distortion turned up. Did you notice any Grizzly Bear in there? For some reason,
Grizzly Bear covering an old Ventures song.
Yeah, maybe.
Speeding it up a little bit.
Okay.
I actually went and I looked these guys up on YouTube just to kind of see if there were any video clips. And they played a few of their songs on KEXP, which is that's the station in Seattle, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And there's some video on there. And then when you look at these guys, I swear they look like they're 16 years old.
Wow.
It just made me want to drink battery acid. So these guys, they're very, very young.
I don't think they would have beards, do they?
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, they all look like kids that are, you know, probably live on your street.
Wow.
Very young
or,
and very
or
fresh
in
face.
Our houses, as the case may be.
That's
they
true.
Look that young.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Wow.
All right, so, well, you can't go wrong with anything on there, so pick something else.
Barrett, you got a pick?
Okay, I'm going to pick the song called Twin Peaks. And when Chris brought up, you know, who that last song that he chose reminded Morgan of, we all had a good laugh, and you guys can have a laugh at who this reminds me of after we hear.
Okay, we'll play this song first. This is Twin Peaks.
Okay, so there's a lot going on there. I mean, after the first, I looked at the time on there. The first 55 seconds is really where it sounds like the band that I'm going to identify in a second. And then it starts to sound like the Shins kind of imitating that band a little bit. And then it starts to sound a little bit like, you know, I don't know what.
Okay, I'm going to say 38 Special.
Exactly. How did you know? The beginning of that song is exactly like 38 Special. It sounds like Hold On Loosely or Hang On Loosely. Yep. All right.
All right. I can't believe I got it. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I would not have
thought that. Had you thought that before? Or
I don't know. I was trying to process it before. That song is just kind of all over. It's like the and this is one that that as I listen to the album, I've appreciated it more. But the first two or three times through, I'm like, I don't know if I really get this song, you know. But yeah, it's sort of an example of how there's a lot of variety on the album. And one of the strengths of it, I think, is a lot of the songs you get halfway through and it takes a turn that is unexpected.
Right. So, okay. Yeah, I think, I mean, I think a lot of young bands do this where their sound is just all over the place. And it's kind of interesting because it's eclectic. But they're going to have to settle on a few things. Like, you hear the first song and it's just like that's their Pavement song. And then they sound like Band of Horses half the time. And then they sound like 38 Special, Journey, and even REO Speedwagon late in the album, if you want to. They do.
Okay, I haven't heard that one. Okay, one of the things also about this album is that I think they've titled the songs. I don't know if you've paid attention to the lyrics, Barrett. You're a lyrics man. But some of the songs are titled just in kind of a haphazard, goofy way. One or two of them used to be in a band called Jabroni. So two of the songs on the album are titled Fast Jabroni and Slow Jabroni. They're just naming them because those are old songs they used to play with the prior band. And then there's this title, the first song that Chris played, Neighbor Riffs. I mean, you can just imagine it's probably they, you know, heard somebody down the street playing this or something and they decided to steal the riff. So, you know,
I actually did. I sort of knew what Jabroni meant, but I actually went to the Urban Dictionary and looked it up.
I don't know what it means.
It is an Italian profanity.
Oh, okay.
Slang for a-hole or dumbass. Okay. Also, that's the second one. The third one is a put-down used by kick-ass wrestler The Rock.
Okay.
And here's the sentence they use is, "Shut your mouth, Jabroni."
Boy, I can't think of a better put down than that.
So I guess that clears.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And the song I'm going to play fits in the same theme. It's called Harmonics. They put an X on the end, but basically they're playing what any person who's played electric guitar knows is called harmonics, where you sort of lightly put your finger on the string and it makes this sound that's called a harmonic. And they use these really basic, simple harmonics in kind of a cool, creative way, I think, on this song. Kind of a psychedelic part in there. It's kind of fun.
Now, these guys are from, you said they were from Florida, right?
Yeah,
West Palm Beach.
And I was trying to think of other bands from Florida. It seemed a little strange to me that there'd be a really good band from Florida for some reason.
You know, there's Sam Beam and there's Death Metal, I think.
Yeah. Sam Beam was the one that I had thought of, but yeah. Otherwise I don't recall a whole lot of I know a lot of child molesters live in Florida, but I'm not sure.
I remember reading that Clearwater was the death metal capital.
Really?
Which I thought was funny because my wife went to Clearwater High School, so she said that's not surprising.
There is a kind of a like a metal-y ska band called Less Than Jake that I believe is from Jacksonville.
Hmm.
Or from Gainesville. Maybe they're from Gainesville, University of Florida. So I kind of like them. But other than that...
That band Halo Paw is from Florida.
Hmm. Don't know them.
And then one of the Southern rock bands is from Jacksonville.
38 Special?
Is it?
I don't know. it would just tie in nicely.
That would kind of make sense.
Yeah.
Who else am I thinking of? It's not Skinner. It's not from Florida. That would be ridiculous.
How about Molly Hatchet?
Yeah,
or Blackfoot?
Yeah. I think they're from Miami.
Where are the Outlaws from?
I don't know. Yeah, well.
All right. Well, are there any
other... Of course, I neglected to mention the Miami Sound Machine.
Oh, right.
All right. Yeah.
They clearly are from Florida.
Obviously.
Yep.
I would hope so.
Yeah, you would hope so. Are there any tracks that you guys think that we should not be omitting here, or should we move to the next band?
Well, I think the second song was their quote-unquote hit, and that was named by Pitchfork as one of the best songs of last year.
Yeah, so we're...
So that was the single that came out before the album. So that was kind of a big one. I think that's maybe the most exciting song on the album as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, maybe we ought to play a little bit of that. It's called Swim. So here it is.
That's their My Morning Jacket song with a little Paul Simon / Vampire Weekend interlude.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, it's all over with the reverb turned way up.
Right.
But it's a pretty good effect. I think, there's room for big reverb for bands to use.
Yeah, I agree.
I would just like to mention for the sake of posterity that my two favorite songs on there are Floating Vibes and the aforementioned Fast Jabroni. So...
Oh, man, so we're leaving those out. So, but we'd be up to, like, 70% of the album then if we played those.
To get fast Jabroni, though, you almost have to play the whole song because it's, you know, it starts out, like, as kind of a happy stomp, and then halfway through they just kind of give it over to, you know, this riff that kind of goes on for a while.
Well, and Slow Jabroni is kind of like that, too, where it starts out and it's kind of plodding, and you're like, oh, where's this thing going? But then by the end it does go somewhere. So,
yes.
Yeah, it's cool. All right, well, good. Well, let's get to our bonus band, and we'll have Barrett introduce them because he's the one who suggested them and persuaded Chris and I that they were worthy.
These are his boys.
All right, I don't know that I can consider these guys my boys, as Chris wants to say. They're called Neon Indian, which is kind of an awkward name. It's not a name that I would choose for my band. I don't even know where they're from. But one of you guys, I'm sure, looked it up.
I looked it up, and they consist basically of a guy named Alan Palamo from Austin, Texas.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And he's recruited some people to make a band, but I think most of it's done by him.
What is it about Austin? Everybody's from Austin.
Well, it's kind of like Brooklyn. I think people move there.
Sure.
They, not like they grew up there necessarily, but they move there because there's a good music scene there.
That's true.
Or the attention there is so such that, you know, there may not be a whole lot more talent there, but they get discovered more often just because they're, you know, record people or
there's definitely labels
something there. That set up shop there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, if Madison, you know, if one of these bands, Sleeping in the Aviary or whoever, got really big and, you know, people started coming in here and looking for other talent, the next thing you know, then the, I don't know, Screaming Sin Sin in the Ponds would be the next big thing, right?
Yeah. You just never know.
Yeah.
There are a lot more bands out there than, you know, you can ever pay attention to. So, yeah, right. There's still got to be some kind of break that gets people to pay attention.
We Are Beatrice is going to be playing the Grammys next year.
That could happen. Don't rule it out.
So, all right. Now knowing that they're from Austin, Texas, and, you know, that scene sort of conjures up, you know, some thoughts and expectations from the music, and none of those I don't think are met by this band, by their sound. It doesn't sound like a Texas band.
Nope.
Maybe if one of you guys wants to pick a song afterwards, we can talk about who it might remind us of.
Okay. I had the last pick on Surfer Blood, so I'll take the first one here. And I thought that the catchiest song on the album that I enjoyed quite a bit is one called Terminally Chill. And let's just play it, then we can comment on it. Think Austin, Texas. Here you go. That's Terminally Chill. I think I forgot to mention the album is called Psychic Chasms. It was released late in 2009.
So I was listening to this with my son, who's 9, and I thought I had it pegged. I was like, oh, this sounds like somebody. You know what it sounds like? It sounds like the Go Team. And he said, no, Dad, that's Daft Punk. I'm like, oh, my God. he's exactly right. You know, that little solo at the end, that's straight off of a Discovery song. I don't know which one. And just kind of that whole thing. The other thing that's going on in this one is it's very reminiscent of that Paul McCartney Christmas song, you know, Simply Having. It's got that. It's got the same instrumentation. It's, I think, consciously borrowing from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did notice there are some parts. There's one part that sounds like it could. It was completely ripped from Daft Punk's Homework. I don't even know what song it is, but yeah, I mean, I was thinking of this, and the only thing I could think was that this is like hippie disco.
Yeah, it sort of is.
I mean, it takes like the most hippie-ish parts of Daft Punk and makes a whole, stretches it out to a full album.
Right.
So
they do this kind of weird phasing effect on the high end and the cymbals and everything, and it almost creates sort of a lo-fi to me. It doesn't usually. Dance music has like this more high fidelity type sound to it. This has this kind of bizarre, and actually that's what kept me from being more interested in it when it first came out, and I saw the reviews were good, and I sampled a little bit, and then like, I don't know, you know, it just sounds like it's not well recorded or whatever. But then after Barrett instructed me to listen to it, and I did, then I grew to like it.
Well, I think that's absolutely the effect that they're going for, kind of like a 70s type of effect where it sounds like, you know, it was recorded on some, you know, 8-track tape.
Yeah.
Like in 78 or something. And right. You know, it's been worn out to the point where it's.
Yeah, that's true.
Surfacing or something.
Yeah, I used to get that phase effect with old cassettes.
Right.
Because yeah. The cassette head would get bad and it would start phasing like that. Yeah. Okay, who's got a pick?
Let me go with one. I would go with Laughing Gas, which, again, has the same kind of fading in and out effect, and but then with kind of like a little, you know, catchy little dancey riff in the middle of it. So that's what okay. I'd do.
And this whole album is only a little over 30 minutes. It's a succinct 12 songs, 30 minutes.
Yeah, there are a couple songs that are interludes in here. There's a 48-second song, a 57-second song, 25.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's kind of stuffed with little parts that get you from one song to the other. So.
Yeah. Okay, here's Laughing Gas. Had to fade it because there's only a little over 30 seconds left. Can't play the whole thing.
I think in the late 70s they tried to take some of the Star Wars songs and make them into like disco songs.
Yeah.
And they had those like laser effects in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there are things
that's
like
the exact effect, I think.
And some of those synth leads are just they make me smile. You know, it's like there's something that there's a humor effect in there.
Right. And the whole thing has got that, you know, old analog synth sound that's got a lot more warmth.
Yep.
Than newer things. But
yeah, the first time I listened to it, I was thinking, is this all their own stuff? I mean, is it you think it's all sampled?
I don't know.
All sampled, or you think it's just all original them playing?
I interpreted it as all original, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I did too, but I could well be wrong.
Because it seems like there are a lot of familiar sounds in there that they'd have to go back and recreate.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to know whether the instruments they used were new or old stuff. You know, because you can imagine, I mean, think about how many old 1967 Fender Telecasters are out there, you know, guitars. People are playing old guitars forever. And a lot of those old synthesizers are probably still out there. So I wonder if he used old stuff, or, I mean, I'm sure there's new stuff capable of making those sounds too.
Yeah.
The new stuff would be a lot cheaper.
That's true. Yeah, but you could just find, you know, some old synthesizer at a pawn shop or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you could collect.
I've got one
stuff
in my basement that makes like five different noises, and they're all actually kind of funny.
I've got one in the basement of my friend's office that has like two broken keys, and I was getting rid of, I had one of these actual legit 80s synthesizers, and it's got like broken keys and stuff, and it's been sitting in his basement of his office for like 5 years, and he hasn't done anything with it, but he thinks he's going to do something with it. Someday maybe he will.
All right, so Barrett, you pick out a deep cut for us, since you're the expert.
All right, since I'm the expert, I'm going to pick number 7. It's called Should Have Taken Acid With You, and I think it just kind of hits home on, you know, this has got kind of a trippy druggy feel to it. The entire album does. I don't think that's a secret to anybody that is listening to it, but I think the whole thing is pretty catchy and enjoyable, and this is one that fits in with that vein.
Wasn't this one on Pitchfork's list also?
I don't know.
I think they had this on like some kind of favorite track list, whether it was a favorite of the year or something, I'm not sure. Anyway, okay, here we go.
Now, you know what that reminds me of?
Nope.
And it would make sense that Barrett likes it. That sounds a lot like MGMT, right?
Oh,
or
kinda.
Management?
Yeah. Well, it does sound a bit like that.
The beginning of that song sounds almost almost note for, or you know, sound for sound like the beginning of a song on an MGMT album.
Yeah, that's true.
Or
sounds
management.
A little bit like Air too.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it's a fun album. I'd like to thank Barrett for making me listen to it. I think it's
We're
a fun
exaggerating
album.
The coercion that went into Will's listening to this album. I think it was an email that said, "How about this?"
That was what it was, and that coerced me into listening to it. Like, I guess I got to listen to this,
or yeah. I kill your dog.
Yeah,
nope, that was the subtext. Part. You got to read between the lines, or in this case, between like the four words.
It's just always implied.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I listened. All right. Well, I guess that wraps up our two bands this week. And, you know, we're just, since we have an insatiable musical appetite, we, you know, we might have to start featuring three and four bands every week just so we can keep up with ourselves.
Probably live bands, I think.
Yeah.
We're going to have people come play in studio.
Yeah. What do you think, Barrett? How would we fit a band in here? There's a little bit more room here than there is in your coffee shop.
Put the drums in the bathroom.
A little
here.
Less, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put the drum kit in the bathroom. We'd have to get out of here. But, you know.
I recorded a guitar part one time with the amp in a bathtub. It was fun.
Wow.
Yeah. It created quite a cool effect, I thought.
That's cool.
Yeah. Have you ever seen those... what is it like the it's Pitchfork had a series where they recorded bands and they were either in a bathroom or a basement or something, and they got these, you know, really interesting sounds. I think they did one with the Pains of Being Pure at Heart, and there was a video of them playing, and it might have been in a bathroom, and they just put the band in there, and they, you know, they set up in there, and they had their amps, obviously they can't be turned up too loud, but you know, they've got everything set up in there, and it actually sounded kind of cool because you just get this natural reverb in a small room.
Yeah.
That I don't
sounds
know.
Familiar. They recorded people someplace.
Yeah, I mean, they probably didn't do it. They, you know, somebody probably just did it and submitted it, and they thought it was cool enough to put it up on their site, right. You know.
I know they've got a video series where they record people in this church.
Yeah, that one's really cool.
I don't know what it is about that church. You know, maybe it's just the stone that there's a lot of... you know, a lot of echo in there, but it just, it sounds fantastic.
Right.
Andrew Bird in there, and, you know, the way he sets up his violin and plays the loops and does all that kind of crazy stuff. It's just, it sounded great.
I saw the Camera Obscura one they did in that church, and that was fantastic. Did you see that one?
I did, yes.
Yeah, they really sounded great. In fact, my mom is almost 80, and she thought that was great, the Camera Obscura in the church. So, yeah, she's no Uncle Chuck, but, you know, she knows her music.
Yeah, that's cool.
Uncle Chuck loves the Flaming Lips. Got to bring him up once a podcast.
Right. All right. Well, okay. We'll have our business meeting after the podcast. And thanks, you guys. And any closing remarks? Guess not.
None for me.
Okay. We'll talk to everybody again next week. And until then, what do we say? Until then,
feet on the ground and reach for the stars.
Yeah.
All right. Good night.
Bye, musical.